Judaism, what we're going to be dealing with here is the Western religions and you have the three Western religions and then the two main Eastern religions. Of course, the three Western religions, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. The Eastern religions, Hinduism and Buddhism, are the two most important. Okay? And so, with Christianity and Judaism and Islam, there's five things that they have in common. Before we start discussing Judaism, I just want to briefly talk about those. First is a supernatural monotheism. A supernatural monotheism. They believe in one personal God, monotheism, and it's a God who can perform miracles, the supernatural aspect. So Jews, Christians, and Muslims believe in a supernatural monotheism, one creator God who can intervene and perform miracles. Number two, the God they worship is both transcendent, is a far away, separate God. He's distinct from his creation. He's above his creation. But this God is also immanent. So they worship a God who's both transcendent, far away, and immanent, close. A God that can intervene, can perform miracles. A God that sustains us in existence. Number three, this God has revealed himself in propositional revelation. This God has revealed himself in propositional revelation. In other words, he has revealed himself using statements, in fact, written statements. The Jews would accept the Old Testament, 39 books of the Old Testament. They group them differently, but they accept the 39 Old Testament books. The Christians accept the Old Testament books plus the 27 New Testament books. And then the Muslims pay lip service to the Bible, but really emphasize what they think the latest revelation to God is, and that's in the Quran. Okay? And but they do reveal in a personal God that can reveal himself in written propositions. The fourth commonality, a belief in heaven and hell based upon one's earthly life. Judgment or punishment and rewards. And then number five, all three religions, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, all three religions agree with the Western philosophical tradition and rationality. All three religions agree with the Western philosophical tradition and rationality. Now you got to understand what I'm saying here. Western philosophy, Greek philosophy, the Greeks didn't agree on everything, okay? But some guys did win the debates. And so even though you had skeptics like Sextus Empiricus, even though you had skeptics who denied absolute truth, denied absolute morality, even though you had monists like Parmenides, believed all reality is one being, and Zeno argued that movement is impossible. In the end, the debates were won by the Socrates, Plato, and Aristotle types. Guys who believed in the law of non-contradiction. That there is absolute truth. To contradict the truth involves you in falsehood. A cannot equal non-A at the same time in the same way. That's the law of non-contradiction. Also, the law of causality, that every event, everything that has a beginning, has to have an adequate cause. Okay? And they also believed that God created the world in such a way that the sense perception is basically reliable, the basic reliability of sense perception. Okay? And then that's just an overview. There's also some other laws of logic and things of that sort. But basically, whenever you find forms of Christianity or Judaism or Islam getting away from absolute truth, the reliability of sense perception, and things of that sort, they're actually getting away from traditional Christianity, traditional Islam, traditional Judaism. So when Francis Schaeffer was writing his works and talking about how modern man was rejecting the idea of antithesis, that to oppose a truth involves falsehood, and that instead we're synthesizing and making our own truth, which is an absolute and all, that kind of thing does as much damage to Christianity, or does as much damage to Judaism and Islam as it does to Christianity. Those are things that the Western religions do believe in: a personal creator God, a rational God who created man in his image so that we have reason, created the universe in a way that makes sense. And by the way, this right here is totally consistent with the foundation of modern science. Atheism is not. Because with this, you know, here you have, here's a little chart I drew for my students the other day, and they complimented me on my artwork, but I don't think they remember what I was trying to teach them. So I just drew a little cliff. Okay. And so now this is off that cliff, okay? I could draw another cliff on that side. So this is just hanging in the air. Reason, morality, meaning in life, the worth of human life, okay? These things are eroding right now, but the atheists are still, they're trying to throw out God, God of the Bible, but they still trust their reason. They don't believe that there's a rational cause for their reason. Their reason had non-rational causes, non-living things evolving into living things and eventually evolving into man, but they still trust their reason. Now, they're starting to say, well, there's no meaning in life. Human life isn't really sacred. We can kill babies before they're born. Maybe we can start killing babies after they're born. Maybe we can start killing older ones. So these things are starting to erode because there's no foundation for it. But morality, they'll say there's no such thing as right and wrong, but then they'll still protest a Donald Trump speech, okay? They'll say there's no such thing as right and wrong, but then they'll protest for animal rights, okay? So, but the fact of the matter is, Friedrich Nietzsche was correct, the German atheist. He realized if God is dead, those things die with him. So what's anchoring these things to the ground? What's grounding these things is God. But once you throw out the rational, moral God who has given us meaning and worth, those things go too. But the three theistic religions understand that without a personal God, there's really no... The ancient Greeks could reason and could know there was absolute morality, but they really had no basis for it. Okay? And trying to find a basis, they got pretty close to God. I mean, Aristotle got to the unmoved mover. And, but whatever the case, so those are the five commonalities of the religions of the West. A supernatural monotheism. The God they worship is both transcendent and immanent. This God's revealed himself in propositional revelation, written form, a belief in heaven and hell based upon one's earthly life, judgment and rewards, and that all three religions agree with Western philosophical tradition and rationality, like the law of non-contradiction, the law of causality, and the basic reliability of sense perception. Now just skip to the next page, and we'll get right into Judaism. So it says Judaism, it's got the introduction there. Judaism is the root of Christianity, and Christianity is the fulfillment of Judaism. The Old Testament is Jewish. The New Testament also is Jewish, written primarily by Jews, but even if a Gentile like Luke wrote it, it's coming from a Jewish perspective and building upon Old Testament prophecies. So the New Testament, Jesus and the apostles are Jewish. The true God of Israel is the God of Christianity. So the reason why we would talk about Judaism as being a false religion is not because true Judaism is false. It's just that the Jews today no longer hold the true Judaism. If they did, they would have accepted Jesus as their Messiah. The way Jesus put it in John chapter 8, he said, if you guys really were sons of Abraham, you would believe the words I'm telling you. So they were physically Jews, but they weren't spiritually Jews. Paul in Romans 2, 28 and 29 says, true circumcision is not outward, it's inward. It's circumcision of the heart. And so whatever the case, keep that in mind that Judaism is really fulfilled by Christianity. Now, there are today many Messianic Jews. Jews who accept Jesus as their Savior and Messiah, but choose to retain their Jewishness. Okay? By the way, there's only like 20 million Jews in the world. Well, in reality, there's probably a lot more people with Jewish blood than just them. It's just that when a Jewish guy trusts in Jesus as his Messiah and Savior, he's much more likely to marry a Gentile gal than if he had not accepted Jesus. And then they have kids who are half Jewish, half Gentile, and they're probably going to marry, they're more likely to marry Gentiles than Jews because there's so many more Gentiles than there are Jews. So in other words, an awful lot of Jews lost their Jewish identity by becoming Christians and aligning themselves more with Gentile Christians than with their Jewish roots. But you do have to factor in how many Jews have been slaughtered throughout the ages. But just keep in mind, if the Jews have been around for 4,000 years, how come there's only 20 million of them? America's only been around 200 and something years, and there's 300 million of us. So, I mean, an awful lot of the Jews not only have been persecuted and murdered, but an awful lot of the Jews, and then too, there's many Jews that just left the Jewish faith, hung out with Gentiles, married Gentiles, and just could care less, and then didn't remember their Jewishness. But whatever the case, there is a remnant, and the Jewish people are still here, just as Jesus said in his word, that they would be around in the last days. Now, the history of the Jews, I'm not gonna go by this chart. I'm going to just give you a quicker history here. By the way, the two Eastern religions are pretty much non-theistic. So you get theism in the Eastern, in the Western religions. The Eastern religions is more of a non-personal God, but we're going to see Winfried Cordovan has done a lot of research, opened my eyes to something in dealing with the Hindu views on God, but we'll talk about that when we get to it. But you know, before the Jews, you had creation. God created everything perfect, but then we fell into sin. Creation fall. Mankind got so bad that God flooded the whole earth, started over again with just eight people. Noah's two sons, or Noah, his three sons, and their wives. Then mankind hung out together, was involved in false worship, tried to make a name for themselves and build a tower. God divided their languages. Then God said, okay, since all the nations are worshiping false gods, he turned them over to the sons of God, the divine council. But these angelic beings led the people astray, established false religion. They rather be worshipped than lead the people to worship God. And so God had to pick Abraham, and from him promised that he would raise up his chosen nation from Abraham. Abraham was very elderly, his wife was barren, so it was going to have to be a miracle to bring this about. But God said that from Abraham's seed, all nations on earth would be blessed. And that's where we Gentiles, we're like a footnote on the Abrahamic covenant. But we're there, that we'll be blessed through Abraham's seed. Paul said that seed is singular, it's not plural, so he's talking about Jesus. That and all nations will be blessed in two ways. Spiritually, salvation has gone to all mankind, so we can at least trust in Jesus for salvation. But then also, the curse is going to be removed, and Jesus is going to reign upon the earth, and all the nations. He's going to bring peace to the planet Earth. So there's two ways that we'll be blessed through Abraham's seed. Now the promised son, his name was Isaac. Then he had Jacob and Esau, but Jacob was chosen. And then Jacob had 12 sons, Joseph being one of them. Okay? And Jacob, his favorite wife, married Rachel and Leah, but he got tricked into marrying Leah. So his favorite son was his 11th son, Joseph, because Joseph was from Rachel, whom he loved. And so he ended up, when he blessed him in Egypt, after he had been sold into slavery and all, he blessed, instead of blessing him, blessed his sons Ephraim and Manasseh. So he gave Joseph the double blessing. So as far as Jacob was concerned, Joseph was the guy that was going to be passed on the birthright. But in reality, his oldest son, even though he was born to Leah, was Reuben. But Reuben had sexual relations with one of his dad's concubines. So that would have disqualified him. Simeon and Levi, the next two sons, when their sister Dinah got raped, and they were considered like second-class kids because they weren't born to Rachel. So the fathers, the rapist said, hey, I want to marry your daughter that I raped. And he said, okay, that's a good idea. And so Simeon and Levi were so ticked off, they went to the Shechemites and said, hey, you guys, you got some good-looking gals, we got some good-looking gals, we can intermarry, we can become one people, it'll be great. We got a problem, though. If you want to become one of us, you got to get circumcised. And the guys said, hey, you know, you got some good-looking gals, we'll do it. So on the third day, when they were at the height of their pain, from the circumcision, Simeon and Levi just walked. It was kind of the first door-to-door ministry. And they just walked and just hacked to death all the males, and then took the spoils. And Jacob's response, he was such a wimp, he wouldn't even avenge his daughter. Justice would have demanded you go get the one rapist. Because he left it in the hands of younger, less wise guys, bigger tempers, they ended up slaughtering an entire village of guys. And but Jacob told Simeon and Levi, now everywhere we go, people are going to want to kill us. Read the next few chapters. Nobody messed with them for quite some time after that, because it was like, man, stay away from these Jews. You mess with one of their ladies, they'll wipe out every man in your town. And by the way, Bible says in the last days, a great power from the north, it'd probably be Russia, with Iran, is going to invade Israel in the last days. I'm telling you, the Jews are still the same way. You know, forget about eye for eye, tooth for tooth. You poke out my eye, I wipe out all your people. I mean, they've got to have that attitude, because they're about the size of New Jersey, surrounded by a billion of their enemies who have sworn to wipe them off the face of the earth. But, so, there you get the patriarch period, the Jewish fathers. Then, the Exodus. The Jews are rescued in Egypt from the famine through Joseph. But then eventually you get a Pharaoh who knew not Joseph. Egypt was a weird place because you'd have a dynasty of pharaohs going back numerous generations. Then foreigners would defeat them. And whoever the leader of the foreigners would be, he'd be the next pharaoh. Whereas, you know, most countries, they would just change the name of the country. You'd have a whole different title for the king or whatever, but they just pick up where the Egyptians left off. The problem with that is, though, when the foreigners come in and conquer you and you get a new pharaoh, he doesn't know the history of his people. And so that may have been why they ended up with a pharaoh who knew not Joseph and didn't remember the debt that Egypt owed. And it's just like, who are these people? We shave, we bathe three times a day, and we got these hairy, smelly shepherd guys living over there, and they have more kids than we have. They look like a bunch of rough, tumble group of guys. We, you know, if we don't enslave them, they might someday enslave us. And then, you know, you got to throw the firstborn in the Nile and this and that, and eventually God raises up Moses through the 10 plagues, parting of the Red Sea to deliver the Jews. And then they wander through the wilderness for 40 years because they lack faith, because there's giants in the promised land. But eventually you get the conquest period with Joshua. They conquer the promised land. But then you get the judges period after that. After they conquer the promised land, there's still pagans in the promised land. They didn't wipe all of them out. They didn't kick all of them out. The Jews start intermarrying with pagans, start worshiping false gods. The Jews were divided. Said there was no king. The time of moral anarchy. There was no king in Israel, so each man did what was right in his own eyes. And so a lot of American Christians read that and say that, okay, having a king is a good thing. No. Samuel the prophet, the last of their judges, said, God told them, they haven't rejected you, Samuel, they rejected me as their king. See, a free people, God wanted the confederacy of separate tribes united under God, God as their king. But a free people have to be able to police themselves. Most human beings, God instituted human government to serve us, not to enslave us, to protect our God-given human rights. But if we won't police ourselves, if there's no king in America, and each man does what is right in his own eyes, then we're going to get the government we deserve. Okay? And that's what happened to the Jews. And so you had the United Kingdom period, where you had the first king from the tribe of Benjamin was Saul, but God's spirit departed from his line, so that then it went to the tribe of Judah. You had David, Solomon. By the way, Jacob had blessed Joseph, gave him the double blessing, blessed two of his sons, Ephraim and Manasseh. But we know that the blessing didn't come down that way. Reuben disqualified having sexual relations with his dad, one of his dad's concubines. Concubines are like a wife without rights. And Simeon and Levi disqualified for killing all those guys. The fourth guy, he messed up, but I guess not enough. His name was Judah. And so poor Leah, she felt, lived a miserable life and felt unloved by her husband. But her fourth son's name was Judah. And from the line of that little boy would eventually come not only King David, but the greatest Jewish king, Jesus of Nazareth. And so, yet, you know what? The Bible says that Jesus was a son of David. Nowhere is he called the son of Solomon. Yeah, yeah. And Joseph was a son of Solomon. But the godly line got broken at Jeconiah. He would never have a descendant sitting on the throne, Jeconiah's curse. But David also had another son, Nathan. And through Mary, one of the genealogies traces Jesus' lineage through Nathan. So Jesus had to have, listen to this. Jesus had to have, he had to somehow be in the royal line from Solomon to David, okay, in order to have the right to rule. Well, Jesus was adopted into that line. If he had been born into that line, he would have been under Jeconiah's curse. He would have Jeconiah's blood running through his veins. So he's a son of David biologically through Nathan. But he's a son of David legally through Solomon through adoption. So he had the right to rule. His brothers would not have had the right to rule, because they were, Joseph was their biological dad. Jesus was born to a virgin. And by the way, that's why in Luke's gospel, which records the genealogy of Jesus through Nathan, it's all given from Mary's perspective. So Mary will talk about her prayers and her discussions with Elizabeth, whereas Matthew apparently got the birth accounts from Joseph. Joseph will talk about his dream and stuff like that. So it only makes sense that one would use the royal line that Jesus was adopted into through Joseph, and the other one would use Mary's line. So you got the United Kingdom period, then the Divided Kingdom period, where Rehoboam makes a dumb move, the son of Solomon tries to raise the people's taxes. So Jeroboam leads the 10 northern tribes to break off from the 2 southern tribes. So you have a divided kingdom period. During the divided kingdom period, the Assyrians in 722 BC take the northern tribes captive, but God rescues the southern tribes of Judah and Benjamin. And so it's not till 606 BC was the first siege, and then 586 BC was when the temple was destroyed, and the Jews were taken captive in both times. So the captivity goes from about 606 BC to about 536 BC. Then under the Persians, it's the return period. The Jews were allowed to return and rebuild the temple and the walls, though many of the Jews still stayed in Persia, like Queen Esther. Then after the return area, then you've got Greek rule. Israel falls under Greek rule with Alexander the Great. After he dies, his son was special, so he couldn't rule. So the generals fought it out, and they split it in four ways. And the king of the north was from Syria. So you have the Jews under Syrian rule. You have Antiochus Epiphanes. this demonic ruler slaughtered a swine in the temple, put a statue of Zeus in the temple. This elderly priest, Mattathias, when ordered by a Syrian official to offer a sacrifice to a pagan god, he refused. And another Jewish priest did offer the sacrifice, so Mattathias got so mad, he slew with a sword the priest who offered that sacrifice, and then he slew the Syrian official. Then he was a wanted man. He fled to the hills with his sons. One of his sons' name was Judas Maccabeus. And it was the Maccabean revolt. And they waged guerrilla warfare against Syria and eventually purified the temple. You can read about that in the Roman Catholic Bibles, at 1st and 2nd Maccabees. You can get a little bit of the background there. Eventually, the Jews were under Roman rule. About 65 B.C., with King Herod, and the temple was already rebuilt here, but now they really fixed it up. So the second temple became more and more beautiful and all. And then Jesus, the Messiah, came. The Jews rejected him. And then in 70 A.D., the temple was destroyed. And the Jews were scattered throughout the ancient world. And so they retained their national identity, even though they didn't have land. And you've got things like the Holocaust during World War II. Horrible treatment of the Jews, but in 1948, the Jews regained control of the Promised Land of Israel. 1967, they took full control of Jerusalem. Now, the Bible says that there's going to be a 7-year peace treaty that will be signed, and halfway through the peace treaty, this guy that got the treaty signed, is the Antichrist, is going to stop animal sacrifices, so the temple will be rebuilt. But then he's going to go into the temple, 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, proclaim himself to be God, demand that he be worshipped. His right-hand man, a false prophet, is going to institute the mark of the beast is 666 on the right hand and the forehead, and the Jews are going to be persecuted once again. But then at the end, all Israel will cry out to Jesus, and all Israel will be saved. Joel 2 verse 32 says, everyone who calls on the name of the Lord will be saved, and that's after the sun's been dark and the moon doesn't give its light and the stars fall from the sky. So that's all we have time for today. And so we'll pick it up next week, and we'll talk about the Jewish feast days and the three branches of Judaism. And we'll probably finish up Judaism next week and talk a little bit about Christianity. I'm assuming that we know a decent amount about Christianity already coming into this course. And then so that we might be able to start Islam a week early, which would be real good. So I'll stick around for a little bit if you got questions. I do have to go to our school's got an auction today, so I